Well, I went back and I couldn't find any. So it's all marked Bible quizzing. So I'll just have to struggle through today. You'll have to struggle through because you'll hear the voice. I'll just talk. Let's pray and then we'll jump in. Lord, thank you so much for today. We thank you again for your wisdom and your grace and your goodness to us. Thank you again that you are a good father to us and that we have your example. Thank you that we can come to you crying, Abba, Father, and we know that you hear us when we pray. We thank you that you are a just, good, and righteous Father. I thank you for the fathers you've given to us. Thank you again for the example of my dad, and thank you that he lived well and he was a good example to me. I pray that you would help me to be that kind of example to my kids. Thank you for the privilege you give us who are fathers to be that way. Thank you for our kids and grandkids. Lord, I pray that you would encourage us today as we dig into your word, that we would be stricken with the idea that worship is good, worship is required, and worship is not supposed to be easy. I pray that you would help us to take seriously our call to worship you as you desire worship. Thank you for our time in your word this morning, and we do ask this all in your name. Amen. Make sure if you have a chance to say hi to your dad today. I ask God to say hi to my dad today because he's there in his presence. And if you get a chance to spend time with your kids, that's a great idea. Great plan. So we're in Deuteronomy chapter 12 right now. And Deuteronomy chapter 12 really is a lot of the who and where and what to do in regarding worship. And the where is important because God is going to make his name known in a place. We talked about that. Actually, if you read through the Old Testament, you'll discover that the place actually moves around up until David puts it in Jerusalem. Sometimes it's at Hebron, sometimes it's at Shiloh, but the first place they put it when they get into the land is at Shiloh. But it moves around. The tabernacle moves around, and it tends to follow the ark, except when the ark is taken away and ends up in a guy's house for a while. But it does move around. But the place is important, and they're called to worship at that place. Now, as we get to chapter 12, verse 18, or verse 15, he kind of steps aside a little bit from actually the place of worship and moves into a distinction between slaughter and sacrifice.
It's being taken care of.
Oh, perfect. Thank you. A distinction between slaughter and sacrifice, because there's a difference between slaughter and a difference between slaughter and sacrifice. And so he's going to make it clear that it is okay for them to kill meat and to eat meat, but it's not okay for them to kill meat and eat meat as a part of a sacrifice any place. But where they are, you can kill meat. So they had always been able to go hunting. Hunting was not they were not prohibited against hunting. They could go out and kill wild animals, shoot them with a bow, however they were to catch wild animals. That was okay. The deer, the gazelle, those kinds of things that were clean animals to eat, they were able to go out and get those. This is the distinction between offering an animal from your flock or from your herd, not offering. This is a difference between taking and eating an animal from your flock and from your herd, or taking that animal from your flock and from your herd and offering that as a sacrifice to fulfill a free will offering or a vow offering, those kinds of things. Now, we know that burnt offering and guilt offering and sin offering, those all absolutely always had to be at the place. There's no discussion about those. All of the guilt offering, the burnt offering, the sin offering, if you want to have those defined, go to Leviticus, read the first seven chapters of Leviticus. That's what that is. It's a definition of what those offerings are. So just go back there and find that and read it for yourself. I'm not going to do that now. But in addition to those burnt offerings and guilt offerings and sin offerings, in addition to that was the offerings for a free will offering, the offering for a vow offering. Those also He's going to make it really clear those also had to be offered at the place at which he chose to make his name dwell. Those offerings had to be offered there. So what does that do? That prohibits then from eating? I mean, you got all these animals. Got all these animals. And every time we want to have, an ox butchering, we have to go to Jerusalem or go to Shiloh or go to Hebron or go to wherever it is, take our animal there, have the priest butcher it, and then make the trek back home? Well, guess what? We're not going to eat much of our own food then. We're not going to do that because it's really hard. It's really hard to make that journey. It's not hard. Israel's not very big. You know, even in their expanded territory, if you look at the size of what God promised them, it's still not very big. But if you consider how they were to get around, and it would be walking or, you know, driving in a wagon, it was not quick to get any place. It took a while. It took a while to get from one place to another. And so it would have been really hard for them to eat any of their meat. So he's going to actually give them some parameters for that. He describes the distinction between slaughter and sacrifice. And he basically, I see three distinctions that he provides. The first is this: slaughter is for eating and sacrifice is for worship. That's the big difference between slaughter and sacrifice. Slaughter is for eating, but sacrifice is for worship. Look at the first part here. He says, however, you may slaughter and eat meat within any of your towns as much as you desire, according to the blessing the Lord your God has given you. The unclean and the clean may eat of it, as of the gazelle and as of the deer. Only you shall not eat the blood. You shall pour it out on the earth like water. You may not eat within your towns the tithe of your grain or your wine or your oil, your firstborn or your herd or your flock, or any of your vow offerings that you vow, or your freewill offerings, or the contribution you present. But you shall eat them before the Lord your God. So here you go. Here's the difference. Difference is, when you're a slaughter, just slaughtering animals and eating animals, that's just for eating. There's no worship involved in that. There's no ritual involved in that. There's nothing involved in that at all. Slaughter is it's just for eating. It's just to have steak. That's all it's for. But sacrifice is to fulfill either the tithe or the firstborn or the vow offering or the freewill offering. That's a part of worship. And God demanded, not only did he desire, but he demanded that worship was done at the place he chose and the way he chose to do it. That was the difference. Now, there are some specific stipulations given regarding how even the blood that, just gave it away, the animal that was to be slaughtered was to be slaughtered, and how it was to be prepared for them to eat. And one of the key things is they had to drain the blood. The blood had to be drained out of the animal. They could not eat the animal with its blood. Leviticus tells us that they were not to eat any blood because the life of the animal was in its blood, and they were not to eat the life. They were not to claim the life and eat the life of the animal. They certainly were taking the life of the animal, but they were not to eat the life of the animal. They weren't to drink blood. Now, there's two reasons for that. The first reason is because of the symbolism of the life and blood. God wants that to be very clear, and the blood is going to be used in worship. Blood is often used in worship. You'll see as you read through the sacrifices and read through how those were to be done, the blood was to be drained out, and then some of the blood was to be thrown on the horns of the altar. Some of the blood was to be sprinkled all over the place. On the Day of Atonement, when the animals were offered as a sacrifice, the high priest would go in. I believe he went into the Holy of Holies four times on that day. Here's why. There was a bull offered first, right? There were actually two bulls offered first. There was a bull offered for the high priest, and then there was a bull offered for the people. And then there was a goat offered. There was a goat offered for the high priest, and there was a goat offered for the people. And each time when one was offered, he would go in first with the blood of the bull that was offered for him, and he would sprinkle that blood on the mercy seat. Then he would come back out. The next time he would go in, he would take the blood of the bull that was offered for the people. He would sprinkle that on. He'd come back out. Then he would take the blood of the goat offered for him. He'd go in, sprinkle that, come back out, and then the fourth, the goat offered for the people. So I believe he went in four times on the Day of Atonement. You'll hear people say, and one time a year, just one time, but that's not true. It's just not true. If you read how it went, he went in four times on that one day. But that's, you know, I'm not arguing with anybody, even though they want to get it wrong. But there's that ritual. So blood plays an important role in the ritual and worship. So there's that. There's also his desire, God's desire for Israel to be different from all the other nations. He wanted them different. He wanted them to be set apart and distinct from every. He wanted to establish a holy people that was different from everybody else. And every other form of worship in those days, where they were going into, every other form of worship, every other god was worshipped by the drinking of blood and the partaking of blood. And he wanted no likeness of those things at all. In fact, he's going to tell them not to shave themselves, not to make themselves bald, not to cut off their beards, not to do a lot of stuff. And a lot of us here this morning don't have beards. Are we in violation? Well, no, not at all. But I want to understand the reason he's doing that is not because he hated clean faces, but it's because he wanted them to be a clear and separate people from the nations around them. And the nations around them would shave themselves. Men would shave themselves, especially if they were priests for their gods, because they wanted to look effeminate. They wanted to look not like men, because that's the way worship was done for those false gods. Worship was not done by praying. Worship was done by committing sexual acts. And so the priests of those false gods would shave themselves so that they would look like a female, so that they could. And so he wanted them to be completely and totally distinct from them in how they looked and how they acted and what they did. So there's that call to drain the blood. That is something that still happens today. You know what makes a kosher, not a kosher pickle, of course, because pickles don't have blood. And by the way, the most kosher pickles you eat aren't really kosher anyway. They're just called kosher because of the way they're flavored, but that doesn't make them kosher because it says kosher on the package. It's not what it is. What makes a food kosher, especially meat? When we lived in Pennsylvania, we had some really good friends, and he was a veal farmer. That's what he did. He was a veal farmer. I'm not putting a stamp of approval or disapproval on how they make veal. I'm not saying that. But every 15 weeks, he would send off a load of veal, and it would go to the Jewish place where they would do it, and they would hang the veal upside down, the little calves upside down, and they would slit their throat, and they would drain all the blood out, and then the rabbi would then bless that meat. But what made it kosher was not the rabbi's blessing. What made it kosher was the fact that it was the throat was slit, and the blood was drained out. That's what makes it kosher. They still do that today. In Israel, and in fact, in any Jewish place where it says it's kosher. Kosher means it was killed by such a way that the blood was drained out. If you got a kosher chicken, that's the way it was killed. If you got kosher beef, that's the way it was killed. You have kosher pork. There's no such thing as kosher pork. Pray for the Jews. That's awful. That's awful. I thank God every time I eat pork that I was not born Jewish, because, you know, bacon's a more marvelous thing. Anyway, I'm not going there. I'm not going there. I'll get myself in trouble. So again, slaughter is for eating, sacrifice for worship. And it's interesting. What does that mean when he says the clean and the unclean alike? Does that mean they can kill and eat unclean animals? What does that mean? So it says right there, the clean and the unclean alike. So is he giving them permission to eat unclean animals? Maybe they can have pork. Be very careful, because he says it made clear, the clean and unclean may eat of it. So it's not the food that's clean or unclean, it's the person that's clean and unclean. Remember, we've already talked about several things that make a person unclean. Remember Leviticus? You know, you wake up with a nosebleed. Oops, unclean, you're out of here. And what he's saying is, though you don't have to be ceremonial clean to participate in eating that meat, because it's not ceremony. It's not worship. It's not in any way, I understand that everything we do today is a form of worship, but in the ceremonial kind of worship that he's talking about here, eating meat, just to eat meat that was slaughtered, is not a form of worship, and so you didn't have to be ceremonially clean. I said it right that time, to eat that meat. You didn't have to be that way. Clean and unclean alike could eat. Now, that doesn't mean that unclean people could come inside the camp to eat. They still had to eat outside the city and stuff like that, but they could go ahead and eat that food because it wasn't part of worship. So, again, first distinction, I believe, is that slaughter is for eating, sacrifice for worship. Second distinction, slaughter can be done at home. Sacrifice has to be done at the place he chose. Has to be done at the place he chose. And again, but this is verse, I think, 18. But you shall, this is the contributions and sacrifice, but you shall eat them before the Lord your God in the place that the Lord your God will choose. You and your son and your daughter, your male servant, your female servant, and the Levite was in your towns. So he says that there's clear instruction here that slaughter, if you want to slaughter wherever you are, you want to have, you know, you want to have one of your little lambs for lunch, go ahead, slaughter it, make sure you drain the blood, eat it wherever you are. You don't have to come to the place. But if it's any kind of worship, if it's any kind of sacrifice, if it's anything at all that you're going to offer as a sacrifice, either a vow offering, a free will offering, the firstborn of your flock, all of that, you must come to the place that God chooses. Why? Why? Well, he says, you all come together so that then you can rejoice together. You can rejoice together. You can have joy in the fact that God provided for you, that God is going to hold you accountable to the vow you made. You're offering a free will offering to God. A free will offering to God was offered just because you wanted to praise God and to say, look, God, I am so thankful for the way you've blessed me, thankful for the way you've taken care of me. So you bring a free will offering, and you offer the free will offering that has to be done at the place so that all of your family, all of your household can rejoice together, not that, whoo, we get to eat meat, but so that you can rejoice together in the great God that you serve and the great God that you're worshiping as part of worship. You're going to rejoice together. What that does is it lays the foundation for generational worship. That's what it does. Having a steak at home, you know, firing up the barbecue and cooking a steak and everybody having a steak, it may be fun. It may be exciting, but there's no generational worship in that. That's just having a steak. You know, that's just eating a kosher hot dog. That's all it is. It's nothing. There's no real worship going on there at all. There's no real generational passing down of worship from another. But if you are going to a place, let's say I've made a free will, I want to make a free will offering, so I load the family up and we head for Shiloh. What do you think one of the conversations is going to be on the way to Shiloh? Hey, Dad, why are we going to Shiloh? Last week we just killed the cow, or whatever it was that we ate. Why are we going to Shiloh? Because we're going to the place that God chose to make himself known, because we are going to go to worship God. Why do we worship God? Oh, let me tell you why we worship God, because he rescued us from Egypt. He brought us out of Egypt and set us up in this land. He drove out the inhabitants of the land before us, and now we have this place and we have this God that we can go worship. Guess what you're doing when you have those conversations, if they're being had correctly? You're passing generationally down faith to faith, or belief to belief, or worship to worship. It's passing generationally down from one generation to the next. You get to Shiloh, you offer it, Your whole family rejoices. Why? Because God provided this for us so we could do it. And it gives you the opportunity to talk about God from generation to generation to generation. So I believe that's one of the reasons he set it up that way, so that it would be done at that place and would give dads an opportunity to have those conversations. Not only was that going on, but as if you recall, there are several places in the land where things have been established so that when you walk past and your son asks you, hey, Dad, why is that there? You have the opportunity to talk about why is that there. If you never pass it, it makes no sense to have something set up that says, hey, Dad, why is that there? So that's why it's really important. So this is, slaughter can be done at home, in your village, wherever it is. Don't even need a Levite or a priest to do it. They do now, but in that day they didn't. And sacrifice has to be done at the place that God will choose for his name to dwell. That's two. Third distinction is this. Slaughter is to eliminate cravings. Cravings. But sacrifice is to fulfill worship. He says this, verse 20, when the Lord your God enlarges your territory. Sorry. Was that Joseph? Are you in here? It was already opened. I wonder if he opened it or not. He opened it? Sure, okay. Sorry, I'm weird, but I don't like to drink open water. Where was it? Oh, so I was reading this. When God enlarges your territory as promised, and you say, I will eat meat because you crave meat, you may eat meat whenever you desire. So there it is. It's a craving. I will eat meat because a person wants meat. There's nothing wrong with eating meat. You can eat meat whenever you desire. And he says, if the place that your Lord your God will choose to put his name is too far from you, then you may kill any of your herd or your flock, which the Lord has given you, as I have commanded you, and you may eat within your towns whenever you desire. So there is this, in order to avoid that craving, in order to avoid desiring meat more than desiring God, then they could have it. And so he is avoiding those kinds of cravings, which Israel, they've already demonstrated that they can be in a place where they want meat more than they want God, right? I mean, there is actually a town named, it's named Kibroth Hattaava, I think I'm saying that right, that actually is a town named Cravings, the Brook of Cravings, because it's at that place, if you recall, they craved meat. They had it every night. You read Exodus coming out, as they're coming out of the land and they're hungry, one of the things God does for them is every morning he gives them manna and every evening he gives them quail, but he gives them just enough to get by. And at Kibroth Hattaava, they come to a place where they say, oh, we remember the meat pots in Egypt. Oh, we would just sit by them, we would stick our fork in, and a whole hunk of meat would come out on the fork, and it was just that never happened, by the way. Never happened, but that's the legend they had already determined in themselves. So God gave them, remember the quail, like 3 feet tall, quail, phoom. It just rained quail. Look, duck. No, not duck, quail. and remember, they were so passionate about the quail. They were made so excited about the quail that they were just, they began to in some sense, I believe, they were worshiping the quail more than they were worshiping the God who gave them the quail. And halfway through eating the quail, God says, okay, I'm done. You guys like quail more than me? And so he sends this plague, you remember? He sends a plague among them. Well, they'd already demonstrated that they could do that. So he gives them the ability to eat meat when they craved it, so that craving wouldn't become an idol for them. So the craving wouldn't become something they worship and cause them to desire it more than God. So he gives them that. But he gives them the same kind of distinctions. He gives them the same kind of distinction. Eat it wherever you want to, only you must drain the blood. You can't eat the blood. And so it says, only be sure that you do not eat the blood. This is verse 23. For the blood is the life, and you shall not eat the life with the flesh. You shall not eat it. You shall pour it out on the earth like water. You shall not eat it, that it may go well with you and with your children after you, when you do what is right in the sight of the Lord. So that's the slaughter and sacrifice again is for worship. And here's what he says, verse 26, but the holy things that are due from you and your vow offerings you shall take, and you shall go to the place the Lord will choose and offer your burnt offerings, the flesh, the blood on the altar of your God. The blood of your sacrifice shall be poured out on the altar of the Lord before, but the flesh you may eat. And so there's actually, remember, part of the deal with sacrifice was that flesh did get eaten, but you had to give a portion of that to the priests. If you recall, the priest got a portion of every sacrifice offered or eaten in your town. The priest didn't get any, but you had to make sure the Levite got something, because the Levite was supposed to be taken care of by the people of the town. But any kind of an offering had to be done at the place. The priest got his, and then you ate it as in line with how it was supposed to be. So that is really the last part of chapter 12, verses 15. Well, I call it the last part of chapter 12. I'll tell you why in just a second. 15 to 28, that is all about the differences between slaughter and sacrifice. And like I said, I saw those three major differences between the three. And again, it is so that there's a distinction between what is being done as ceremonial worship and what is being done as just everyday life. It doesn't mean that everyday life wasn't a form of worship. It wasn't a form of ceremonial worship. There's a difference between everyday worship and ceremonial worship. Ceremonial worship was something that was big in Israel. Ceremony was big for them, and it was important. It was important. Now, any questions about that? I mean, I probably beat that horse dead. Good news, we can drain his blood and eat him. No, I don't think we do that. That horse is pretty dead. No questions? Mike? Absolutely. Yes, exactly. They understood the significance, and in fact, one of the things they're going to do, you'll find out as you continue reading the Old Testament, you'll find out that they actually participate in all the wrong things. They participate in drinking blood. They participate in offering their kids as sacrifices. They go all in with everything they do. They worship at the high places. They worship with the Baals and Ashtaroths. They shave their beards. They do all the stuff that they're not supposed to do, because they don't take God's warning seriously. That's what they did. Now, that's not the case anymore. Not the case anymore. An Orthodox Jew tries to hold really, really close to the law. They don't do the temple stuff because they don't have a temple. But the synagogue system replaced temple worship, or was a. We'll talk about that another day. So yes, they understood that. I don't think it was a secret to them. Now, as we get to the next section in 12, this is one of those unfortunate chapter divisions. Chapter 13 should start at 12:29, because from chapter 12:29 all the way to chapter 13, verse 18, it's all about idolatry. It's all about idolatry. It's one of those, but it doesn't. I mean, somebody smarter than me divided the chapters and verses. I get that. But if you read, you'll see that idolatry starts here in chapter 12, verse 29, and that's the whole theme all the way through the end of 13. And then in 14, we change gears again. We go back to, I think we go back to food again, don't we? Yeah, we go back to food. So there's kind of this in the middle. I wouldn't call it parenthetical. It just, he goes from talking about food, then talking about idolatry, and back talking about food. And so... this is really all about idolatry, and it's a warning against idolatry, and not it's just not a warning against, it's actually a way to prohibit idolatry by taking it very, very, very seriously. So let's just jump in here. We're flying. Look at that. We got through so many verses. So chapter 12, verse 29 says this, when the Lord your God cuts off before you the nations whom you go in to dispossess, and you dispossess them and dwell in their land, take care that you be not ensnared to follow them after they have been destroyed before you, that you do not inquire about their gods, saying, how did these nations serve their gods? That I also may do the same. You shall not worship the Lord your God in that way, for every abominable thing that the Lord hates, they have done for their gods. For they even burn their sons and their daughters in fire to their gods. So he says to them, first of all, when you get into the land and you go in and you dispossess, remember, the dispossession is not going to be an overnight deal. He's already made that clear to them. You won't dispossess them in a year. It's going to take a while to dispossess them. You're going to take the cities, and that's what they do. If you read the conquest in Joshua, they go in and they take the cities rather quickly because Joshua is leading them. They're going in. The Lord of hosts is with them. After Ai, they actually seek God to see how are we supposed to take these people out. And so they're very successful. I mean, just incredible success, city after city after city. But the land wasn't just inhabited in cities. The land was inhabited in country land too, in areas that were not citified. There were countrified folk, and so they were supposed to continue the dispossession. If you get to the end of Joshua, you'll find out that as Joshua is dying, he actually calls the people together and calls them to continue the dispossession of the land, the dispossession of the people, to continue to drive out. And as you get to Judges, you find out that tribe after tribe after tribe after tribe failed to dispossess. And so this is a warning for them before they actually get into the land, that as they're going through the dispossession process, not to ask questions like, hey, what do you think they did here at this poll? What do you think they did here at the poll? I don't know. Let's go ask. Boy, how do you guys worship your gods anyway? Why do they need to know that? There was no reason for them to know that. They did not need to know how those gods were worshiped. What they needed to know was how to worship God. That's what they needed to know. And so he's encouraging them, don't even ask the question. Don't even have the curiosity. Don't even go there. Because those nations do stuff that, he says, it every abominable thing. Every abominable thing is what they do to worship their gods. That's what they do, every abominable thing. It wasn't something that pleased God. It wasn't something that he thought was great. It was every abominable thing. In fact, it goes so far as to offer their sons and daughters in the fire. There were gods. There was a god called Molech. There was a god called Chemosh, C-H-E-M-O-S-H. And the chief way that they desired worship was that you would throw your kids into fire. You would offer your children as a sacrifice to that god. How awful is that? But we know that there comes the rain, that Israel began to do that. Israel began to offer and was offering, at the time of their judgment, Israel was actually offering their own sons and daughters as sacrifice. So he says, don't do it. Don't even ask the question. But rather than asking those questions and being curious about that, he says, here's what you do. So there's the prohibition, but then there's also the positive. The positive is this. Everything that I command you, you shall be careful to do it. You shall not add to it or take from it. So in other words, don't try to mesh. Don't try to syncretize the two together. Don't say, well, we can worship God this way and we can add some of this to it. Don't do that. Don't add to it and don't take anything away. Here's the deal. If they really were to devote themselves to worshiping God the way he demanded worship, they would not have had time to worship anything else. They wouldn't have time. Worshiping God the way he wanted to be worshiped took effort. It took planning. It took work to worship him that way. Worshiping God the way he wanted to be worshiped in Israel was not an easy thing to do at all. It demanded a a 24-hour-a-day focus on this is how we're going to worship God. That's what it demanded. And I think he demanded that on purpose so they would not be distracted. They would not be drawn away. They would not be enticed to go serve the other gods. There was no time when they would have downtime or idle time. Everything, if you actually just take it and look at what he was calling them to do and look at how much effort it took to be involved in really worshiping God. I mean, there's a time when you hit Passover and first fruits. So from April until September, you would have had to take a trip to wherever God had you go. You'd have to go in April. Then you'd have to go 50 days later again. Then you have to go about 3 months later again. So, I mean, from April to September, three times you had to load up everyone you had in your family and head to the place that God was making his name dwell. That today, it's not hard because, okay, we're going to pack up a few things in a suitcase and we're going to head. You had to load up your whole family, however you're going to do that, and make that trek. And if you lived far away, there's no excuse, there's no reason not to. So you had to go. You had exemption. That's the word. There's no exemption because you lived a certain ways away. Because you lived there, you're still required to go. So, I mean, just those, that kind of planning. You had to plan how you're going to worship. I mean, he gives them, if you live too far away and you can't bring your animal that far, then you had to sell your animal at home and then bring that money, get to Jerusalem, not Jerusalem, get to the place that God would make his name dwell, and then buy an animal to offer as a sacrifice. That's what you had to do. And so he gives all kinds of way to get there, but it was not supposed to be an easy thing. It was supposed to, I believe, cause them effort to do it. Why is that? So that it would be something that was continually before them. It would also be a generational passing down of faith to faith. That's what it would do. As you're working in the field and you're bringing your son into the field with work with you, and you're taking the very first stuff out and you're holding it back. Dad, why are we holding this back? Well, we're holding it back because everything we have is a great gift from God, because he brought us into this land. He gave us this land. And so because of that, we hold the first fruit back so that he can have that. Guess what you've just done? You've had a conversation regarding God, Dad, why are we going to Jerusalem again? We'll stay at Jerusalem now. We're, you know, in David's time. Why are we going to Jerusalem again? Well, because God called us to go to Jerusalem because we're going to go worship him. On your way, guess what you're talking about? You're talking about God. There's a generational passing of faith to faith. That was really important to God, is that the faith was passed from generation to generation to generation, so that they would remember him, so that they would serve him throughout their history, they would remember him. How well did that go? Not very well, because the first generation in the land in Judges is a generation that rose up that did not know God. You see how bad that is? Because everything he established for them regarding worship was so that they would pass it down, and they didn't. It's really a condemnation of that first generation, or second generation, whatever you call it. So that's the first thing, is don't be very careful. Be very careful not to be ensnared by, not to ask questions, not to even inquire, because you're not going to worship in that way. You're going to worship the way God commanded them to be worshiped. You're not going to take anything from it. You're not going to add anything to it. You're going to do it exactly the way he called them to. And then he gives three examples of folks who might try to dissuade them from that kind of worship. And in chapter 13, he talks about a prophet or a dreamer of dreams. If there's a prophet or a dreamer of dreams that comes to you and says, hey, God spoke to me in a vision, and he said that it was okay It was okay for us to worship those gods that way. We have now a reason. We have now a way to do it. After all, worshiping God his way is really, really hard. And so he came to me in a dream and said, go ahead, worship that way. He says, if anyone comes to you and says that, kill him. Kill him fast. I'm not saying that. That's not my words. He says, where am I? Verse 4, you shall walk after the Lord your God and fear him and keep his commandments and obey his voice, and you shall serve him and hold fast him, but that prophet or that dreamer of dreams shall be put to death because he has taught rebellion against the Lord your God. Put him to death. Don't say, oh, don't say that. Don't say that. That's not, no, put him to death. Don't listen to him and put him to death. So the first is a prophet or dreamer of dreams. Well, that's easy, okay? So, you know, some prophet shows up in town. I don't know him very well. He just shows up and says, hey, by the way, we can worship other gods. Boom, hey, I know I'm not supposed to do that. Come over here, Bill. Boom, you're dead. The boom was mine. They actually would probably stone him to death. So he was killed. He was supposed to be killed. But now we move from prophet or dreamer of dreams to family members. Family members. If your brother, the son of your mother, or your son, or your daughter, or the wife you embrace, or your friend who is as your own soul, entices you secretly, saying, let us go and serve other gods. So if your family member now begins to entice you and says, hey, I would see it like this, this worshiping God is hard, and we need to do something, but why don't we just go and worship those other gods? I mean, the high place is just right up the hill. Just right up the hill. We don't have to go all the way to wherever that tabernacle thing is. We can go just right up the hill. We can do it there. It's the same thing. It's just the same path. The same God, just different paths. We can do that. Can't we? Verse 10, you shall stone him to death with stones, because he sought to draw you away from the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, the house of slavery. So even if it is your family member, your close family member, trying to entice you to do that kind of worship, don't listen to him. Stone him to death. Stone him to death. Because he's trying to entice you away from God. So it is if you hear of your a prophet or dreamer of dreams, a family member. And then the third is leaders of a city or other cities. He calls them worthless fellows. So he says this, if you hear in one of your cities, which the Lord your God is giving you to dwell, that certain worthless fellows have gone out among you and have drawn away the inhabitants of the city, saying, let us go and serve other gods, which you have not known, you shall inquire, make a search and ask diligently, and behold, if it is true, to be certain that such an abomination has been done, you shall surely put the inhabitants of that city, not just the worthless fellows, but the inhabitants of the city, the entire city, are going to be put to the sword because they followed after those other gods. Do you think God took worship of himself his way seriously? I absolutely believe that he did. Why is that so harsh, God? Why can't you just tell him? Because it's really important to him that he has worshiped his way. In fact, not only shall they put the city to the sword, but they're actually going to devote to destruction everything in the city. The cattle are going to be killed. Everything is supposed to be gathered, put into a heap, and burned. Everything gathered, put into a heap, and burned. Wow. So you treat that city like they're going to end up treating Jericho here in just a little bit. No spoil is to be taken from that city. The city is supposed to be completely and utterly destroyed and devoted to destruction. It'll be a heap and not be built again. Why is that? Because God takes very seriously worship of himself his way. And again, he ends this section with, if you obey the voice of the Lord your God, keeping all his commandments that I am commanding you today, and doing what is right in the sight of the Lord your God. So he demands worship his way, not another. And he takes it very seriously. So I finished right on time. Perfect. Good. Any comments, we'll talk about more next time. So, all right, let's pray. Lord, thank you so much for time in your word this morning. Help us to devote ourselves to worshiping you your way and not seek to do it our own. Thank you for your goodness and grace. We ask this in your name, amen. All right, you're dismissed. Thanks.